The Yani does not come in peace. Most people believe when they approach a spiritual master, the spiritual master is going to bring peace, harmony, happiness, abundance, joy, love into their lives. As a matter of fact, most people come to spirituality because they want to improve their humanhood. They are not satisfied with their lives. There's something missing. They therefore approach spirituality with the idea that things will become better in their humanhood. This is a grave mistake. A sadguru, a sage, a yani, comes to upset your life, to pull you out of your samskaras, to resolve your karma, to make you free. But in order to do that, he does not add on. We have a chorus.
I'm underlining what you're saying. They agree with you.
That's nice. The wolf man. Anyway, a spiritual master does not come to please you. A true spiritual master is not lovey-dovey and brings you kindness and good cheer. If a spiritual master does this, he or she is not a true spiritual master. The truth is, you are already filled with all kinds of nonsense, ideas, concepts, foolishness, stuff from previous lives. This has to be pulled out of you. So the sage, through certain methods, certain disciplines, causes certain things to happen in your lives in order to become free. This is the reason why only mature people really attract a true sage. If an immature person attracts a true sage, they will not be able to stand the fire. It will be too hot. For things will begin to burn up in their lives, which means in English that things will appear to become progressively worse. People come to a sage for health problems and their health becomes increasingly worse. As a matter of fact, some people even die. People come to a sage to increase their financial bank account. and they go bankrupt. The whole idea is your approach to a sage has to be unconditional. You cannot have preconceived ideas of what the outcome is going to be and what's going to happen to your life. Yet you may be assured of this. As time passes, all your so-called stuff will be burnt up and you'll become free. If you can hold on. So the sage does not come in peace. If you're looking for peace, you came to the wrong place. Your true nature is already peaceful. You are peace. How can you look for peace? How can you want abundance when you are that? How can you want health when there never was any sickness? This is difficult to comprehend in the beginning stages. For we're always thinking, analyzing how things ought to be. That's another mistake we make. If we want a sage in our life, we have to totally surrender and trust the self, which is the sage, which is consciousness. We have to surrender our desires, our bad feelings, our good feelings, our interpretation of how things ought to be, conceptual thinking. We have to give up entirely. This is why a teaching such as this is not for all people, especially in the West. For the egos are so big and become ruffled so easily. What's the difference what is happening in your life? Whether it's going this way or that way or this way, up or down, down or up, east or west, south or north, going to heaven or going to hell, what's the difference? Why are you so concerned about the future and about your family and about your job? And about everything else. If you would only give up those thoughts, by give up I mean surrender, let go of your everyday thinking. And begin to have faith in the powers within you. Then you will see how things will turn out. When I say you will see how things will turn out, I'm not referring to time or space. If you were to give up your body right now, it would be the most wonderful thing you can ever do, as far as you're concerned. For then you will experience the freedom that you're looking for. That sounds strange. In reality, you have no body to give up. And nothing is happening. There is no movement. There is no movement in time and space, and there's no time and space for there to be any movement. You're doing nothing. Nothing is being done. Yet you will experience total freedom and total liberation. I know some of you do not know what I'm talking about. I don't know what I'm talking about myself. It sounds good though. I can never understand what anybody's ever worried about. What do you think can possibly happen to you? What are you afraid of? How many times I explained to you that the substratum of existence is infinite love. Absolute reality, pure awareness. That's you. Yet you will not accept this. You concern yourself with the news on television, the stock market reports, what's happening in Europe. If you were around 500 years ago, the same things were happening. Just different names. The world is totally ridiculous. The world is a joke. A cosmic joke. And the joke's on you. Simply because you will not wake up. You're always thinking, trying to change bad for good, hoping you're going to have a good week this week, hoping you will not be in pain. This is exactly what I'm referring to. What difference does it make? It doesn't make any difference. You are a child of the universe. And if you will surrender all of those things, give them up. By give them up, I mean you are no longer concerned over them. If you have terminal cancer, that's okay. If you have abundant health, That's okay. If you have millions of dollars, that's okay. If you have $0, that's okay. When you begin to be equal, when you become balanced, and there's no more differences to you, then you will feel something happening. For as long as there is the slightest difference, then the scale becomes unbalanced and you feel these differences in your life. So you are the cause of your misery and the cause of everything that happens in your life. Simply because there's no one else but you. There appears to be others. There appears to be a world. There appears to be accidents. There appears to be man's inhumanity to man. And these appearances are very strong. Yet, are they really happening? And to whom are they happening to? For some strange reason, a thing called an ego appears to have come into existence. And it is the ego going through all these experiences, not you, but the ego. If only you would separate yourself from your ego and observe and watch the ego going through all these experiences, crying, laughing, having pain, having health, worrying, fretting. Just observe the ego doing all these things. To the extent you can observe this, to that extent will the ego become weakened. The ego does not like to observe itself. It wants to be master and have total control. But as you begin to watch without reacting, just watch. No feelings about anything. The ego begins to dissipate. And as soon as the ego dissipates, there is unalloyed happiness. You didn't look for the happiness, like looking for the Holy Grail. You did not have to go far away to lands overseas to find this happiness. You did not have to do certain prayers or yogic kundalini exercises to find this happiness. You merely stood back and allowed the ego to burn itself out. That's how you become free. All the things you're trying to do to become free by improving the humanhood is like pouring oil into the fire. It increases the ego. When will we learn? We go through so many experiences. We repeat things again and again and again. We appear to drop the body and take on a new one. Go through so many lives, searching, fighting, trying to improve our station in life. When are we going to learn this is not the way? We do not have to try to improve anything. We're trying to go in reverse to remove the notion that something has to be improved. You see the difference? We have to remove the idea that there is something wrong somewhere or something right somewhere. Not try to learn something new to add on to what we already have. That just increases the size of the ego. It's like climbing a mountain and carrying 10 backpacks. We become so tired, we sweat, we can hardly walk. Therefore, the wise person takes off the backpacks one by one and lightens his load. Only a fool will continue walking with 10 backpacks up the mountain. That's how it is with us. We appear to be carrying the world. All the worries, all the nonsense, the fears, the frustrations, everything seems to be carried on our backs. Instead of trying to remove them, we go about learning about new things. New systems of yoga, new teachers, new techniques, and we added on to the old techniques. In other words, we never got rid of the old ones before we can add on the new ones. So it's like putting on 11 backpacks and 12 backpacks and 13 backpacks and climbing that hill. We can hardly walk, but we're too stupid to take off the backpack. So it is with what we do in life. We go after this and we go after that, and we search for new doctors and new Indian chiefs, new gurus, new teachers, new advice, new meetings. We're always adding more information, more information. We read new books and we say, wow, I never knew this before. This book is interesting. We add that on to everything else we've learned. And we become more intellectual. But we become intellectual jackass. We remember all kinds of words and knowledge, ideas, quotations, and we keep adding on and adding on and adding on. We've been going in the wrong direction. We want to take off, take off, take off, not add on. We want to unlearn just about everything we've learned since we were children. We want to become empty. Not so we can acquire new knowledge. Emptiness is the knowledge. Emptiness is another name for wisdom, for jnana. Try to remember, the more you remove the burden from yourself, the greater will be the harmony and peace and happiness in your life. Due to the fact that this harmony and peace and happiness are your very nature. It is not something you have to find somewhere. Try to remember this. You do not have to search or look or find any body to give you these things. You are that. Only you've been hiding it. It's as if you have a candle and you put layers of cloth around the candle and you keep piling up the layers and layers and layers and the fire is burning within. You have forgotten about the fire within. And you're searching for light. As you remove the layers of cloth, the light becomes more meaningful. Until one day you remove the last layer and the light has always been there. The light has never gone anywhere. You are the light. That's why it is written, ye are the light of the world. Fred likes that.
Scripture.
Yeah. Ye are the light of the world. This is true. But you will not acknowledge it. You will acknowledge the layers of cloth. The problems, the inconsistencies, the things that appear erroneous, that you're always ready to acknowledge. You're ready to stick up for your rights, to fight for your beliefs. Yet these are the things that have to go. All of these things have to go. You have to become virtually empty. Totally empty. There is nothing that can hurt you. As I explained before, unless certain things happen in your life that seem to hurt you, I use the word seem because the hurt is only an appearance. You can never grow. This is why when a true sage comes into your life, he or she pushes your buttons to see what you're all about, to see what will happen. If you really have true grit and can hold on, or if you're still weak, and drop away. Think of the things going on in your life right now, good or bad. There are still people who tell me, Robert, I don't think I need this teaching because I've got everything I want. How can we misunderstand a teaching like this? If the world is an illusion, if it doesn't really exist, then having everything you want is a double illusion. The idea is not to want anything. It sounds paradoxical. Everything has already been given. You are well cared for. Take an orange tree. An orange tree is laden with oranges. And yet if you do not pick them, they will rot. New oranges will not be able to grow. The more oranges you pick, the greater the orange crop the next year. The oranges want to be picked, so that a new crop can always grow. So it is with our lives. When you hold on to things, you stagnate. We were meant to loose everything, to let go. Not to hold on to things. This is why God told Moses, when he was walking in the desert for 40 years, every day you shall receive new manna from heaven, but do not save it. Share it with everyone and leave the rest. And new manna shall be provided for you daily. The ones that didn't listen and they put manna away for the next day, all kinds of terrible things happened to those people. They quarreled amongst themselves. They fought each other for the manna. They claimed there will not be enough tomorrow. And they died at the wayside. But those who had faith in God's words and didn't concern themselves about tomorrow were well supplied, and they made it to the land of milk and honey. I think that's how the story goes. Where was the land of milk and honey? You don't know if that?
Yes, sir.
Sounds good. Well, this is something like us. We go about things in the wrong way. The entire banking system of the world is simply a plot for certain people to become rich. The whole world is nonsense. And as long as we abide in the world, we're going to suffer. By abiding in the world, I mean mentally. Again, this does not mean that I'm telling you to give up your job and live in a cave and leave your family. I'm referring to go on with your work and do whatever you have to do, but to mentally let go of attachment to person, place, and thing. Everything begins in your mind. Again, I tell you so many times, do not concern yourself with how your work is going to be done, or whether or not it will be done. The same power that grows the grass, that causes the sun to shine just right, so that life is maintained and sustained, that power will maintain and sustain you. If you trust it, not faith in it. And one day you will recognize and learn that you are that power. And that the maintainer and sustainer comes out of you. You have been giving life to all the world. It is because of you that the universe exists. Your fault. You did it. Look what you've done. A fine mess you've made. So what are you going to do about it? It's as if you exhaled and created the universe and inhaled and annihilated the universe. That's a good picture to have of God. They say a breath of God takes 240,000 years. So when God exhales, the universe comes into existence and lasts approximately 240,000 years. And then God inhales and everything is dissolved for another 240,000 years. Then God exhales again and the world is created again. That's a stupid story. Well, whatever the story is, it's a story and it's a lie. Why can't I just tell you nothing exists? No thing is the way it appears. You start with yourself. This is the reason, if you can get rid of your body and realize one day that you are not the body or the mind, the whole universe will disappear for you. So do not try to get rid of certain things in your life, for they will just be replaced with new things. You try to get rid of your husband or your wife, and then a new one comes along that's worse than the last one. This goes on and on. Do not try to get rid of anything externally. But work on removing the lie that you are a body and mind. That's all you've got to do. It's been made so easy for us. It simply boils down to the I thought. The I thought is the culprit. All of these things I've been talking about are all attached to the I thought. Great sages have therefore told us if we can only learn to remove the I thought, we'll have a different picture of everything. Everything will disappear in this world. For everything is only in the I thought. And as far as I'm concerned, the easiest way to do this is to inquire from where the I thought comes. Can anything be more easier? Just to find out where the I thought came from will remove all of your problems you ever had. Will set you free. That's all you have to do. Spend your spare time asking yourself where the I thought came from. Can anything be more simple? Where did the I thought come from? There's no answer to that question. Because the answer will only build up your ego. That's why there's no answer. You therefore follow the I thought to its source. And a place has been designated where you should follow the I thought to, and that's the spiritual heart. The spiritual heart is consciousness, absolute reality, God, Nirvana, Satchitananda, Brahman. As the I thought is dissolved in the spiritual heart, you become yourself. Simple. All you've got to do right now is to do it. And you will be free. Feel free to ask questions or make silly statements or do anything you want.
Sir, last Thursday you told us about someone who was stating that it was essential for a person to have a guru in human form.
For most people.
From my impression from what you said, that this is not necessarily. So what my thought is that if an individual believes in his heart that he has come within the orbit of a sadguru, that his head is already in the tiger's mouth, and should that guru give up his body for that individual to think he can go out and find another sadguru or another tiger is kind of a forlorn hope.
What I was referring to last week is that for beginners who have recently started the path and they've been in the presence of a sadguru, and the sadguru decides to leave his body at that time, it is a good idea for them to find another one. For they're just starting out, they're not strong enough to carry on by themselves. But for the devotee, for the disciple who's been with the sage for quite a while, the sage can never separate himself from them. For the sage is the same, whether he's in a body or without a body. The difference is in your eyes. You see the sage leaving his body, which you call death. But there's no such thing in the eyes of the sage. There's no birth and there's no death. There's no coming and there's no going. There's only the one, and the one is consciousness, and consciousness is self-contained. There's nowhere to go. The devotee knows this, and the devotee is always enmeshed in the consciousness of the sage. The sage can never leave such a one. For there's a divine connection. But the beginner who doesn't understand this, the searcher, should find a new guru. For their ego is still so strong, the teacher to hold them down. Clear the mind. Is that what you mean?
Yes.
Does the mood become more toxic? That's the same as including one's humanhood?
Remember, the term sattvic, tamas, rajas, belong in the realms of yoga. They're like everything else we talk about. They do not really exist. They exist in the early stages of a person's sadhana. When a person is first starting out in yoga practices, they're told about being sattvic as compared to tamas and rajas. And you work on that. But that's for the neophyte. When you are in direct contact with a sadguru, all that becomes redundant. It's no longer necessary. Only giving up of your ego, giving up of yourself, surrender of yourself, and practicing self-inquiry, or whatever the sage tells you to do. That's the only thing of importance.
One story about Sri Bhagwan that I've always wondered about, but and I'd like to hear what you have to say about it. This lady came to him one morning and she said, I had a dream last night in which I was approached by a very dignified, beautiful lady whom I recognized at once as Parvati. Parvati is Shiva's consort.
She came. Not Parvati, Parvati.
It's P-A-R-V-A-T-I, isn't it?
Yeah, it says Parvati.
Oh, well, it's my pronunciation.
Such a
P-A-R-V-A-T-I, is it not?
Parvati.
Parvati? Well, anyway, Parvati?
Parvati.
Parvati. Oh, it's P-R-A?
No, it's Parvati.
Anyway, she came up to this woman and said, "My son is not taking his coffee. Please prepare a pot and take it to him." And she said, "Here you are, Swami, your mother's orders." And his reaction was, "Why does she do this to me? Interfering in my life and frustrating my austerities." And then he said, "She did it when I lived on the hill also." And his reaction was so human that it's always fascinating.
Oh, I see what you mean. You have to remember that people like Ramana responds to certain people in certain ways. When a person comes to him and asks him a question, he will respond at their level of understanding. So he was talking in human terms to the disciples who were around him at that time, so they may comprehend what the story means. Why did you bring the coffee to me and interrupt my austerities? He wanted people to know that the people he was talking to, that even a sage wants to be in the silence by himself many times and not have interruptions. In other words, that story was necessary at the time. Do not take these stories literally. This is why all the questions and answers in all of the books, Nisargadatta books and Ramana Maharshi books and other books, you will notice that many times the same question is asked and there's a different answer given. The answer is given in accordance to the maturity of the student. So the answer will always be different. And just like I have lunch with many of you, and I act very human. For that's what you want me to do. You don't want me to be weird. And just sit there and stare at you and say nothing. You'll say to yourself, "That's the last time I'm taking him for it." So if I see you doing something, I'll do the same thing. If you drink a beer, I'll drink a beer too. All is well.
Everything in duality is of no great import.
Duality doesn't even exist.
What we think is
duality. Then you have to do the best you can. Has anyone seen any good movies like them?
Rambling Rose.
Is
that a good one?
Rambling Rose. That's a movie? Who's in that?
Robert Duvall and
we're going to try something new on Sunday. Instead of my talking, there will be that wooden bowl there and pieces of paper. When you come in, write down a question that you'd like answered. You can remain anonymous, so you can say anything you like. And then, rather than my making a talk, I'll simply read the question and we'll talk about the answer. What do you think of that? Any nays?
Quite a few. But it might be okay.
It might work.
People will expect it.
There are certain things some people are embarrassed to ask when they think they're silly to ask the question. Whereas you write it down without signing the name, we won't know who wrote it.
You get the straight stuff that way.
Can the people that want to sign their name sign them?
Sure. You can even sign somebody else's name.
Oh, now you're complicating it. I'm going to sign Mary's name.
I was thinking of doing another wedding for you.
Mary, you're popular. Pure innocence coming up with all the questions.
Robert, help me, please.
Robert, if a person doesn't have a lot of things in their life that they're trying to work on, things like poor health or lack of abundance or whatever, does that mean that they the sage so life's going to fall apart?
say that again. They're going to fall apart.
If a person doesn't come to a sage with things they want to improve in their life, does that mean when they go to the sage, everything's going to fall apart?
On the contrary. What will happen is the things that are holding you back from your ultimate realization will begin to come out of you. and break down and become transcended. So who knows what's liable to happen? But it's all for the good. They surface as a change of conditions in your life. They surface in many ways. There's something that you have to do in order to get rid of something that's hindering you. Let's say, for instance, you're in love with a house, and the house is your God. You worship that house. You show off the house to everybody that you see. You've had the house for many years, and you've fixed it, and you've worked on it. And that's the only thing keeping you back from your realization. All of a sudden, you meet somebody like myself, and your house burns down. So that's good.
Because you're old Jim Caltrick over and over again.
Is that Caltrick?
Christmas.
So, tell the story. Tell the story.
The storyboard.
You've told the story.
Yeah. I hope you're
kind of dressed. Oh, right. No, that's good.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
What's the story?
Yeah. Oh, I forgot.
I give or take a dead cow.
Yeah.
He's still confused as to the name of Shiva's consort.
Pravati.
P-R-A-V-A-T-I.
No.
P-A-R.
P-A-R-V-A-T-I.
That's the way I spell it, but I thought it was...
Pravati.
He's doing right, I tell you. He's doing right. Oh, I'm not about that. I'm still confused.
You said poverty.
It has nothing to do with
well, that's
being
my New England accent.
What is that?
The spelling is P-A-R-V-A-T-I. Okay, that's all it is. Pronunciation is right or wrong.
I got the spelling.
My experience, I just buried a very dear friend of mine last week, and the last, I guess, 14 months, it was about seven funerals I've been to, and one of them was my mother, and we were very close people all the way. So, and coming here through all this time, I don't exactly know what I'm trying to say, so I'm just letting it come out. As much as I see that, it really, this doesn't really matter. This existence doesn't really exist in a sense, and I can see that. But at the same time, I see that and I feel like I'm really not afraid of, the fear of death doesn't seem to bother me from listening to you and all the different people I've been writing, reading. But at the same time, and I am so attached to stuff. I mean, I give things that same power. I really see how important the world is still. Even though I know it's going to be gone very shortly, you know, means nothing. But the pull and the power that it holds over me, or I give it, the power that I give it, you know, a lot of it is dissipated. A lot of things have dissipated in my life. You know, a lot of freedom I've got lately. But I mean, it's still there. You know,
well, sure. This is true of most of us.
Yeah.
That's why we have to diligently work on ourselves. I keep asking the question, who feels this? To whom do these feelings come? It is the I thought that is attached to these things. When you realize the I thought is responsible for your feeling like this, you do not try to disattach yourself from the feelings, but you rather work on annihilating the I thought. You keep working on the I thought. When the I thought becomes weak, then you no longer will feel that way by anything in this world. So again, do not try to change your attitude outside, externally, but rather work internally by removing the I thought. Then you will see what happens.
And the emotion that goes along, the emotion that I have with these attachments,
or that will
subside.
The emotion is the I thought.
Mm.
It's all attached to the I thought.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who feels emotional? I do. Who is the I that feels emotional? Where did it come from? Who gave it birth? How did it appear? What is its source? Find the source and you'll be free.
Mm-hmm. So, like you said before, I'm creating all this stuff.
Of course.
I created
with your mind.
Well, that's the part that, I mean, I see that, and I see that that's a fact, that's a truth. And at the same time, I can't believe I created it all.
Hmm.
Simply, I'm still creating more.
Of course. Inquire.
Yeah.
Who sees this? Who's creating all of this? I am. Always goes back to the I thought. Follow the I thought to its source. And I'm not talking about applesauce. Get back to the source and it'll be fine. Always go back to the source, to yourself.
When you say source, exactly,
you spend
that time
all about.
Yeah.
Your previous source.
Yeah. Characterize it.
Nailed down.
Characterize it for us.
What the hell is that?
Source is God.
Good God.
Source is the deity of your choice.
You said the deity of your choice, would it be one of the great masters?
Yes, of course.
Jesus or Krishna or whatever?
Jesus, Krishna, Moses, Shiva, whoever you like.
Try Robert, but
you're
really sort of warm, overused, tired t-shirt.
Don't feel that way.
Yeah, he's fresh. Hot off the griddle. There's a griddle right up on the boat of mantelpiece.
I ain't gonna argue that.
Robert, when you go to the Lake Shrine, that's our route.
Yes.
They use them all.
I know.
They got them all. Take everything
that's good for them. What about you? You've got to become your own Lake Shrine.
Well, I've heard that all masters are one, they never contradict one another.
True.
sounds as though they do, but in actuality, they're the same.
They say they don't, but when nobody's looking, they get to get another big fist fight.
Oh, I don't know.
Are they contradict themselves? How can they not contradict each other?
some of them
contradict. Sounds as though they do. Like Krishna said, all paths lead to me, and Jesus said, only through me. He said, Father, it sounds contradictory, but not as I say.
Bad translation, though.
Say again?
Just bad translation, though.
Okay.
What are they referring to?
What does Fred say?
It's time for me to shut up. And nothing to sell.
You're doing this thing.
Sir?
You're doing great.
Yeah. Thank you.
Experience today, Robert, that was in line with what you were saying. You were talking about how your energy can break down our facades. I had an experience today where I could tell vaguely, very, very unclearly, I could tell that I was being asked by the universe to give up a massive amount of ego pride, all in one fell swoop with an attitudinal change. And even though I could sense that that's what was happening, I couldn't do it. I went into some kind of a bind. My transmission locked. And I couldn't feel. I became numb. I chose not to fight it, and yet I couldn't give in to it. I wasn't ready to do that. It all hit me in the space of about an hour. And to have this massive amount coming at me and asking me to change, boy, I just watched myself blocking. Even though my head saw somewhat dimly, my viscera couldn't handle it. And so hearing your talk tonight was so beautiful because that's what happened. And I dimly was aware of, if I could give up this massive attitudinal change and give up this ego, this huge chunk. No, I guess at the time I couldn't see what would happen. My mind was too dull and numb. I can see now, sitting in this atmosphere, that I was being given a chance to clear it out, clear out a huge amount. If I could do it with a clear mind and with love. I suspected at the time that if I did give up, I might be doing it with anger and resentment. I figured that's no good. Might as well not let go if I'm going to do it with resentment and anger. If you disagree, let me know. So I wasn't ready to...
I disagree with everything.
Okay.
You're too analytical. Just shove it out of the way.
Well, it's your energy that's helping me see it.
I know. Just say goodbye to all that stuff. It's no longer part of you. When you get involved psychoanalytically in the condition by giving it all kinds of names, you're actually improving the condition.
Making the ego stronger?
Making the ego stronger. Do not look for new psychological jargon to call the ego or what's happening to you. Make it very simple, like a child. Who's feeling all this stuff? I am? Who am I? What is the source of the I? That's it goes on. And you don't have to go through any other experience.
And just let go of the I thoughts.
Let go of it, follow the I thoughts to the source.
Well, I noticed here when I was putting myself back in that place in time to this morning and letting go of the I thoughts, it was beautiful. It just opened up and the unknown, you know, clarity came.
Whenever you feel anything during the day, do the same thing. Ask to whom does it come? I feel it. Who is the I? Where did the I come from? What's its source? And you'll be rid of everything. You'll be free. Keep it very simple. The ego loves to elaborate, to stretch things out, to make a big thing out of it. Stop it before it gets bigger. Do not go on with your thinking. Stop your mind from thinking. Even when you're thinking about higher things, if your mind is going through all kinds of higher experiences, put a stop to it. For the mind is merely playing games with you. The mind is increasing its capacity. With new words, with new concepts, with new attitudes. You want to empty the mind, to clear the mind, and finally to annihilate the mind. So if you're thinking good thoughts or bad thoughts, get rid of everything and have no thoughts. Always remember that you are not a body or mind, and that you are absolute reality, that you are Para Brahman, pure awareness, consciousness, Satchitananda. That is your real nature. God bless you. Peace. Om Shanti.